And when people come for counsel, we will provide them as we have always done with the best wisdom we have. All of this we will continue to do. But will we say anything? Do we in fact have anything to say? What do we know about the universe that would be news to the world? The question is one of access to information of an exceptional kind. The Church has always claimed to know something about origins and purpose and destinies that the world should know. Do we really have any such insights? And are they distinctive and worth sharing? The other questions have to do with authority and credibility. Who authorizes us to speak from our wisdom? And do we speak with integrity? In these days of change, our presuppositions are being attacked. Instantaneous communications, global travel, providing for refugees a haven from tyranny, combine to introduce us to an increasingly pluralistic experience. No longer are we confined by circumstances to points of view that remain unchallenged. Exposure invites comparison, and comparison causes us to think. We have been taught since childhood that God is one. We've been taught certain things about God's character, what He is like. God is holy love. In an environment of growing pluralism, we are being forced to reconsider whether or not God is one or many, whether or not He is personal and personally available to us, and whether or not His character is like that demonstrated in Jesus of Nazareth. We should not jump to immediate conclusions, assuming that what is right. Moreover, we should think the matter through in the light of history and how our understanding of God developed, in the light of the full impact of the person and work of Christ, and in the light of the consequences of any particular view of God we might be asked to espouse. Let us begin a consideration of the matter with Peter's discovery, made in conjunction with the conversion of Cornelius. The latter was an interesting combination of a man. He was a centurion, a non-commissioned officer in charge of 100 men. Centurions were the backbone of the Roman army. They rose from the ranks to be in charge of others. Centurions were men of experience. They had to know their business and they had to know men. Centurions were responsible for discipline, which meant that they themselves had to be disciplined. And it was they who led the forces in battle. In other words, they had to be men of action. Cornelius was a soldier, but he was also a devout man. He respected God. He prayed regularly, and he was compassionate, giving generously to those in need. While not a convert to Judaism, Cornelius nevertheless was a Gentile adherent to the Jewish faith. Obviously, God had more in store for Cornelius. At 3 p.m, not the best time for visions, Cornelius had one. In it, an angel commanded him to send to Joppa for Peter. It so happened that the following day Peter had a vision in which he was commanded to go to Cornelius at Caesarea. The only reason Peter would have hesitated was because Cornelius was not Jewish. He was a foreigner, a Gentile. In Peter's mind was the clear question, is the God of Israel, who came in Jesus, also the God of the Gentiles? It became obvious to Peter that Cornelius was sincere and that God had spoken to him. It became obvious that God showed no favoritism and that Jesus Christ is Lord of all. The conclusion of the story of Cornelius' conversion is that there is one God for all. Let's break in here and listen to the old-time gospel hour.